People say it's all about Cardiff. Well, today it's not all about Pontypridd, but we are going to have a case study from Chris Sutton of Jones Lang LaSalle in a moment about what this might mean for Pontypridd. But just as a case study, we've Hugh David, the leader of Bridgend County Borough Council. We've got Professor Julie Lydon, who is the Vice-Chancellor of the University of South Wales. We've got James Davis of the Urbanists, and Carol Ann Davis, who's the Chief Executive of the Design Council for Wales. The format we're going to adopt, we've got, is about 10 minutes from, or however long it takes, up to 10 minutes from Chris. And we then got about 1 hour for a discussion. I'm going to ask my other four colleagues if they could each speak for a minute or so on whatever they want to say about this subject. And I'm then going to lead a Q&A up here for about half the session. And with about half an hour to go, I'll then try and open it to the floor. Of course, the only thing we know is that that's not what's going to happen. So events will intervene. It'll be what it'll be. But with that polite introduction, Chris.
Thank you. So, good morning. I've been asked to speak for 10 minutes or so on how the Metro can help the wider Cardiff Capital Region and how it will allow Cardiff to connect with its hinterland. And I'm going to focus upon the potential impact of Pontypridd. And it's somewhat a personal journey because my first taste of the Valleys Line from the 1980s, indeed they were my main mode of transport for many years. And my first year at the Poly of Wales was the year that the Pacers were introduced. And as we say, they've both got a few miles on the track. Mrs. Sutton actually at the weekend said, "What happened?" But I briefly want to cover these points. And let's be clear, Pontypridd is the iconic Valleys town. It's the right distance from Cardiff. It has its own identity. It's sat on the main primary road route, the A470, and it has all those train services as well. So Pontypridd is in a very good place to start with. We heard earlier on about Cardiff Central Station becoming Metro Central, but equally the Valleys lines, those core lines, are called Central Metro. So it's all a bit confusing here, but the lines through to Pontypridd go on to the Rhondda, Cynon and Taff Valleys. And let's just quickly whiz up the valley. And this is a site that we acquired probably 2 years ago for Transport for Wales. And so things have been happening in the background. This is the old Forge Masters site, and it's now destined to be that central depot. And last week we saw an announcement of £27 million of EU funding to help deliver that. It is about taking congestion off the road. We already heard about the traffic movements on the A470. It is addressing that congestion and potentially also connecting the disconnected. We heard so eloquently from Pontyclun representative here. And yes, there's an opportunity to upgrade stations or even relocate them. This is my nomination for the worst station in Wales. And it's that dodgy tunnel access. Who would want to use that in the middle of the night? And this is potentially going to be relocated southwards towards the college at Nantgarw. Or we could look at greenfield sites. And this is Power Station Hill. It's the top end of Forest Industrial Estate. It's where the Church Village bypass connects into the A470. What about a park and ride here in terms of assisting those communities built along the Church Village bypass? But the problem with these new stations is that the extra travel time that is associated with them. But MTR, one of the unsuccessful bidders for the franchise, they outlined a case for a second station in Pontypridd itself, on the goods yard behind the bus station, for those that know Pontypridd, using the track to Merthyr on the right-hand side of this picture. And what about tram train technology? Well, here's some news. It was back to the future for Pontypridd. You know, they were here a long, long time ago, but there is a... I just found that image there. And what of Pontypridd town centre? Well, like so many of the Valleys towns, you have long, thin, linear high streets which have suffered from retail closures. And then you think, well, actually, if only we could bring it together and maybe have half the high street that we used to have. The problem is the bank's down there and the post office is down there, and there's a real problem here. But I think Pontypridd is actually recovering. Probably its low point was about 5 years ago when the Sainsbury's opened out of town. Shortly thereafter, Marks and Spencer closed. I've just got a couple of slides here in terms of Let's go through the ages. And this is 1963. Look, Halfords in town, an out-of-town store in town. The famous Prince's as well next door to it. Go on to 1989, this photo I took in my very early days of surveying. And look, we've got financial and professional services, financial services on the high street. Now, that's a novelty. Halfords again, though, decorate, shoe fair. And right up to date, and we've got the world of vapor dens and charity shops. But to be fair, Prince's is still there. And at the far end of Taff Street, you have the old Taff Vale Shopping Centre. 1963 shopping centre full of concrete, and it had 25 years of failed retail schemes. The last thing the town actually needs is more secondary retail, more Poundlands or Poundworlds. I was pleased to work with the council, again, going back 3 or 4 years ago, to propose an employment-led scheme. This will create employment, but also it takes out 20% of the frontage of retail stores, and it creates a pedestrian flow along the other 80% up to the station, therefore revitalising the rest. And we've got three buildings. The furthest one away is the cultural centre, the middle one is vacant and to let in the open market, and the largest one is reserved for Transport for Wales. Good to see Welsh Government putting their money where their mouth is. And the scheme's due to be completed in 2020. Credit goes to Andrew Morgan and the team at RCT for taking the decision to spend some of their reserves, bolstered by Welsh Government support. And Centre for Cities, they suggest that the ideal mix for a town or city centre is 3-1. That's 3 square foot of non-retail, so employment, leisure, and other services, compared to 1 square foot of retail. And this is helping redress that balance. But there are so many other opportunities in Pontypridd. There's the Sardis Road car park. There's Sardis Road rugby ground. And there's these buildings. That's Sardis House. Lots of Sardises in this. Potential hotel site. Stardust Leisure. The former M&S. Pontypridd Market. Or indeed, dare I say it, the police station down the far end. Here's a real opportunity, I think. It's connecting the town centre with the river. Just bear in mind that when these properties were built, the rivers were stinking. They were full of coal waste and sewerage. Who on earth would want to look at the river? It was devoid of life. And actually now, things have changed. And if you just go upstream a little bit, in fact, on the left-hand side here, that's the former Marks and Spencer. Effectively, it's a living bridge. And there's an opportunity there, isn't there? Because if you just go up the river, this is just the other side of the old bridge. And look at the quality that is associated with this, a really good quality river. So what's missing from the town centre at the moment? Well, I'd say we're missing cafe society. We're missing high-quality food outlets, also cheap, flexible workspace, which can build upon the skill base which is offered by a university town. If you look at the diversity in new flexible co-working centres opening up elsewhere in South Wales, yes, perhaps there's always going to be a gravitation towards Cardiff, but there must be an opportunity to make Pontypridd that hotspot that can attract tomorrow's growth businesses. And so much of Pontypridd's success is down to a proactive local authority that's prepared to get on with it, but there is a wider perspective that's required here. And we've spent years exploring local government reorganisation and city regions. Both have been mothballed. And the new kid on the block is the city deal. It's got the momentum to deliver more strategic thinking if we get the governance and leadership right. Indeed, this is the largest single city deal in the UK, and it has specific allocations for funding the metro and a wider investment fund. Now, we heard earlier on, 738 million is the figure for metro. And then we have a wider investment fund. Two projects announced so far, both roughly £40 million, the IQE Foundry. And do you know what? The second one is a contribution to Metro Central, Cardiff Station. So actually, it's not 740 million. We're already up to 780 million going towards Metro. But the main challenge will be to deliver Metro on budget, particularly when we see cost overruns on Crossrail, Great Western Electrification, and the HS2 proposals. Now, we've heard new rolling stocks on order, but we will see these old pacers for some years to come. And users need to see a material improvement. And this is what James Price said. I've just updated the figures from 300,000 to 400,000. But perhaps Barack Obama got it right. Actually, you can't put lipstick on a pig. Look, these are the old Pacers, and they are rough as anything. And what we saw, this is slightly going off piste here, but this is not Pontypridd, but actually 50% of those trains are going to be made in Wales. So this is great procurement in terms of that transport for Wales. This is down at Newport and a new facility with the Spanish CAF company, and they're going to be making 77 of those units, roughly 50% of the new trains. Again, decisions made significantly in advance, because that was agreed 2 years ago. Let's also look at the wider governance as well. Following the Brexit vote, this ministerial task force for the valleys was established. And I roll my eyes a little bit when it was first announced, but to be fair to them, what they did really well was engage with the public. They did the soapbox roadshow, 35, 40 events, and they engaged. The issue now is that this initiative stands at maximum credibility but minimum delivery, and therefore there needs to be something happening behind that. And this report was written. It includes 7 strategic hubs, and there's a political imperative to deliver these. One of those is Pontypridd. There's also the B word. And the key issue is how do we replace this? And the UK government proposes the establishment of a UK shared prosperity fund. No details really announced yet. We see a sort of a slight clash, though. UK government not sure they want to direct this money through Welsh government, and Welsh government saying, no, it's devolved, it must come through Welsh government. Well, do you know what? Perhaps those city deals and growth deals are the way to direct that money, because they are jointly owned by the pair of them. So, in my view, finishing off, Pontypridd is in a good place. It's a far better place than many valleys towns, but there is room for improvement. The town is weak, as I say, on provision for flexible working, tech, leisure, and its food offer. The challenge is now to unlock private sector capital through incentivising investment, maybe a joint venture with an institution or a fund, or perhaps even an urban development corporation for the valleys, dare I say it. So thank you for listening. I'll leave you with this call to arms.
Thank you very much, Chris. So, Hugh, what does this feel like in Kevin Cribber?
What does it feel like in Kevin Cribber? It feels a long way away sometimes, and it feels a long way away because I'm the leader of Bridgend. We've got 3 valleys, 3 equally beautiful valleys, in case anyone's here from the Ogmore-Garra or the Llyn Fi. The big problem for people living in 2 of those valleys is they have no rail service at all. So what does the metro mean for them? It means nothing at all at the moment. They make their public transport journeys by bus, or they walk or cycle, and therefore they need investment in those services. But they're not untypical. Actually, they're typical, because 3/4 of the journeys that are made in South Wales on public transport are made by bus. And we need to make sure that those communities can access the metro and access the opportunities that the metro brings. I agree with Councillor Griffiths when he said about the Maesteg line. So one of my valleys does have a rail line, that's the Maesteg line. There are no concrete proposals yet to increase the frequency of that line. There is only 1 service an hour. That is simply not acceptable to the communities living in the Llyn Fi Valley and living on that main line and those rapidly growing communities. That said, I will be positive in a moment. I'll try to be positive. I will be positive because, in fact, the metro will be transformational for the Rhondda Valley, the Cynon Valley, the Taff, the Merthyr Valley. The level of investment is unprecedented, £1.5 billion over 5 years, and we can see what can and will happen in Pontypridd, which is almost as iconic as Maesteg, of course. What do we need to do? We need to go from phase 1. We've banked phase 1 already. There's big expectations around what will be delivered by metro, but we have to make sure that every valley in South Wales benefits, that no valley and no community is left behind. And I believe by having better integration, investment in rapid bus and cycling and walking is a way to achieve that for all our communities.
Thank you. Julie, I should note, the University of South Wales is it's one of the largest organisations in our new region, and it's probably one of the largest employers in our new region and one of the largest providers in our new region. Are you hugely optimistic about what the Metro means for you?
I'm always a half-full person in life. I am. I think we need to be realistic about time frames. And I want a development board. I think the Metro is only part of this. You've heard from Chris and Hugh. Some of the things for me is we have to be market led, and yet we also need to be opportunistic. And whilst there'll be lots of talk about actually the infrastructure, and the infrastructure is important, actually it's about how you connect that. I'm sure you're going to pick up on the design piece, but for me, we have an opportunity now, today, to say there's going to be an integrated transport here. So actually at the moment, it does feel incredibly bitty. If I try and tell somebody, some of my graduate startups, great, bright people who are looking for space as to where they can go, actually to get around our region is not easy. And yet it's not geographically that far. So I would advocate for a development board that actually thinks about the way that infrastructure complements the development opportunities, is instrumental in enabling people to see those opportunities and to realise them. We have within the region three great universities, all of whom do fantastic work. If we just took the student base, the number of graduate startups that we have a phenomenal track record. We're one of the best regions in the United Kingdom for graduate startup companies originating and still being around 3 years later. And anybody that's running a small business will know that's quite a challenge. But they are getting stuck. There's nowhere to go. Cardiff is overheating for them. It's too expensive. So how do we generate that vibrancy? I've just walked here from my campus, which is 5 minutes walk away. And I know why my young students want to be here. They get access to everything they want here. It's already where it's happening. So actually, how do we take some of that and actually, through Development Corporation, enable some of the things that are happening? I've seen it in countries around the world. If we talk about cities like Berlin, the rejuvenation that's come from the unification of Germany. We are talking 25 years on. We've still got East and West that are working at it. Nobody in this room is naive to say this is all going to happen in a year. But actually, if we don't take this opportunity to move away from where we are at the moment, which is above and below the M4, which is fundamentally one of the dynamics that we're working with, to actually something that enables that development and scope. So I am optimistic. I do think, as a major employer here, as a part of the scene, we are the only university that operates in the valleys. We do have a role to play in being part of that development. And I hope that we will continue to be so.
So you're saying that the Metro is sort of step one. While that's being delivered, let's get on with a broader integrated transport, and let's get on with developing the communities up there.
I would have planning. I would have the looking at economic development. I would have looking at actually how you make sure the people who are living in those regions are healthy. And able to get around and educated enough to be able to take those opportunities. That's why I think it's the development. We wouldn't have Cardiff Bay if we hadn't had that development board. So actually that integrated approach, yeah, it had lots of money thrown at it too, but there's a significant investment here. Chris has already referred to it. It is the largest of the city deals. And if we don't capitalise on this opportunity to, I suppose, turn things on their head, to be quite honest with you, to think differently, to challenge ourselves about actually what we're doing. So actually we don't have all the time people only thinking it happened in Cardiff. Actually we're thinking about how it can happen elsewhere.
James, that's a nice segue into you.
Yeah, thank you. I think I agree with so much of what Julie's just said about the regional picture. The regional picture is hugely significant, and being able to plan that at a regional level is absolutely essential. But one of the things that we've got to do at the same time is think about individual places. From a regional perspective, everything that we've looked at this morning is about rolling something out that is a network. Networks need to be consistent, they need to be reliable, they need to have a similar identity. And there's so much around the valleys in particular that's tribal. And quite often the tribalism is sort of wheeled out as a bad thing or as a negative thing. And I think we've got an opportunity to try and turn that on its head, to be able to say, yeah, we do need something that is network consistent. But when that network touches individual places, it needs to be sensitive enough to do things and brave enough to be able to do things slightly differently. So what happens on the ground in Treorchy might and should be subtly different to what happens on the ground in Maesteg. And the only way of doing that is really to understand what is it about the history of that place? What is it about that place that makes it completely unique and different from somewhere else? And being able to get that fascinating creative tension between getting a network that is completely identifiable, but yet which is empathic enough to deal with the individual idiosyncrasies of places. And then beyond that, I think what we've got to do is think about how Metro influences all those individual stations, because whilst, you know, as an urban designer, I'd be an advocate of transit-oriented development, almost as a North American concept, that works perfectly well in big urban conurbations. I don't think it necessarily applies all that well to the valleys, which isn't that urban in a lot of senses. So I think the concept of transit-oriented placemaking as well as transit-oriented development is appropriate. So where we are able to plan significant new developments that have new homes, new jobs, new community facilities, fantastic. We've really got to latch onto those opportunities. But a lot of the network won't have those opportunities. The land, the sites won't necessarily be there. It'll be a very small station serving its community. And what we've got to make sure is that those every single one of those very small stations are able to perform their job really, really well.
That leads segue. I have nothing to do here because you segue beautifully into Carol Anne and the design perspective on all this.
The design perspective is really kind of multi-layered, but it starts with the governance and leadership. And it really starts with an organisation that has already, I noticed last week, got an award-winning vision, which is great, straight off the blocks. But one of the things we need to do with that vision is all of us to work to make sure that vision is translated into the principles that will deliver the huge potential of this project. If we aren't really able to give it the time now, we could lose the future opportunity, and none of us want to do that. None of us want to escape the opportunity for this foundation phase really to be a learning phase. This is not by any means done. The next 6 years will be critical. What we learn from them, how we reinvest that learning, and how we learn from HS2, how we learn from Crossrail, and all of the stuff that they didn't do early enough and they didn't get right. That's what design's about. And I think that comes as well with the commitment within the organisation, which is about that understanding. I've heard this morning about engineering, market-led approaches. Engineering is a design discipline. So is landscape design, so is urban design, so is architecture. There's a lot of sectors in the room today, but I can't see very many of our young designers under 40 that are future talent. So part of the agglomeration potential here is galvanising our talent. And James is right in that, you know, every one of the stations is actually a small and beautiful opportunity to do that locally, nationally, potentially internationally. So this phase, I think, is critical in learning and making the difference. And it does matter that we look at GVA and GDP and that we look at the growth opportunity. And it does matter that we work across sectors. But I'm just going to invent another sector. It's a people sector, and it would be really fantastic if our communication about this project internally, externally, locally and regionally was as sophisticated as the design approach that's going to be necessary. I stem from the valleys. I spent the weekend at a large family celebration at the weekend where I found some people surprised that the heads of the Valley A465 between Bryn Mawr and Upper Vale was closed for the final removal of Intermediate Road Bridge, which is the bridge I crossed to get to school. is not surprised that that work is happening, but why it is happening. And for a project that was in 70 years in the ether, for its immediate community not to fully understand the why and the how and the benefit is you know, an oversight. So to create exhibition material and to just go out there and show it won't be enough. Specialist engagement, specialist communication, I think, is critical. And Chris, you asked me a question earlier this morning about some of the characterizations of design.
I think my question was, everyone here would agree we don't want bad design.
Exactly.
How do you determine what is good design?
There's a worse thing than bad design, and it's no design at all.
Okay.
And it's a kind of accidental process. And if we're really going to maximise what's going on now in the foundation phase so we can get to the extendability and the real potential, then I think we've got to really understand the iterative process. And it is, it's all about learning, it's all about commitment, and it's all about understanding the bits that really matter. So not just to count, but to count what matters. And I think measure it by its weakest, by its Achilles heel. What can we do better for those people who are least well-served that will maximise the benefits for everyone?
I'm trying to get my colleagues here to engage in a conversation or something. Can I come to you on this, which is, I mean, in a perfect world, you'd start with an agreed, democratically agreed strategic plan for the Valleys region, if I call it that, of which transport, infrastructure, a metro would be part of it. But for a whole range of very good reasons, the metro has piled ahead without us having that coordinated plan. But Julie's calling for the need for coordination of all the activities around this, and James is saying the need for coordination of the development within the communities, and Caroline is calling for the need to coordinate design brief. Do you think that the structures we've got around, the organisational structures, political structures we've got around this project can achieve this, or do we need to create something else?
Well, we've got the Cardiff Capital City Region Cabinet, which has made huge progress in the short time that it's been in place. And in the summer, it made that commitment to a strategic development plan for the whole region. And that strategic development plan will articulate that vision that all 10 local authorities have for the Cardiff Capital Region, and where our challenges are and how we will address those challenges in terms of spatial development. So that's huge progress, given that 10 years ago you probably couldn't get 10 council leaders in the same room, never mind about agreeing to a strategic development plan and conceding some of that that control, that sovereignty. We recognise that for all parts of the region, to truly prosper, they all need to work together, and not just together as 10 local authorities, but work together with partners in the private third sector, and of course the HE sector, and we're working very closely with colleagues like Julie on that.
Chris, if there's a consequence of that, we'll have some coordinated strategic approach towards planning across the whole region. Do you think that that should drive housing development away from Cardiff and up to the valleys, force that, or should market forces take their place?
This is the largest city deal in terms of, at the time of announcement anyway, with 10 local authorities. So you do have particular issues here in terms of coordination. But there's a separate strand of Welsh Government activity, was the Wales Planning Act 2015, and that very clearly set out a three-tiered plan system. Your local development plans, 22 local authorities plus three national parks, three SDPs, strategic development plans, south east, south west and north, and then a national development framework as well. Now, the issue is those SDPs have gone nowhere. The strategic development plan for south east Wales, 3 years on, there is really little evidence of that coming forward. And I suspect maybe the local authorities don't want to cede control for what goes on in their patch upwards. Perhaps what you've therefore seen is the national development framework sort of being extended downwards. And I think there's an element of that, Welsh Government saying we'll deal with it in a different way. But to me, that's the big game changer. What you can do is take more strategic decisions on where things happen, and actually you can achieve economies of scale in terms of delivery. And you know, we see time and time again where things have been delivered in the wrong place. You know, I always say that the number one visitor attraction in South Wales is the Heath Hospital. Huge amount of traffic movements, nowhere near a train station. Well, we wouldn't do it again, would we? Go to Llantrisant, the Royal Glamorgan Hospital. Ah, that's sort of 15, 20 years old. We're not going to do it again, are we? Go to Cwmbran, and we're just building Llanfraqua Grange there. Well, we're not. You look at Coleg y Cymoedd, at the time it wasn't built next to a train station. The train station may well move towards it. We wouldn't do that again. Go to Swansea. We've just built a £700 million university campus on Fabian Way. So we have a system whereby we are taking decisions on where things can happen. Now, the reality is, if you start looking around for a 10 or 20-acre site next to a railway station, you won't find many. You know, maybe St Mellon's is the opportunity to move Cardiff Met. There you are. Heard it here first.
maybe. But just go back to my point, and if I could bring you in as well on this point, James. So if you live in North Cardiff, you can't hear yourself think for the noise of people complaining about the pending traffic problems. Huge developments happening there without the infrastructure necessary to accommodate. It can't, many would say, cope with the population already lives there, let alone what's going to be built around there. Can planning be used to stem that and drive the development up the metro?
I think part of that is actually about the basics of regeneration, which is where public sector investment catalyses and changes the mood music and the sentiment from the private sector. And I think we're already well on with that. There's a load more to go. You know, we get to 2023 and the public consciousness of what metro is really starts to bed in. And we're going to start seeing the private sector make decisions about certain sites that they may not have done without this investment. That means that from a strategic planning perspective, we've all got more to work with. So we haven't got a sort of a Siegfried line that's drawn somewhere in the valleys beyond which viability is a problem. What we want to try and do is move the viability around centres of population, opportunities for development, and around frequency of services. I mean, we're not going to be able to completely change viability in one pen stroke via metro. That's not going to change everything. But I think that we can re-change some of the sentiment around people's attitudes to where they want to live. And I think that will naturally then move through into where developers think that they can actually develop good quality developments profitably.
Carol, so you were talking about the sort of the public infrastructure, public investment provoking all this or prompting all this to happen. Do you see that, Carol, the stations, for example, all the new stations are going to be built, being more than just stations, for example?
I think they have to be, essentially. They absolutely have to be. If all we achieve out of this is, you know, a couple more Greggs and a retail core, nobody's quite sure where your ownership
begins.
Nothing
wrong with Greggs.
But it's got to be more of that. And, you know, the Netherlands is coming up a lot this morning, as you'd expect. But there's a really small thing that Netherlands, Wales have started to do, which is the house karma, which is your home at the station, which has galvanised not only a place where you can actually get something decent to eat, but you can be comfortable. There are different kinds of retail, and there are also local and national design that are for sale. You know, you can buy some flowers, you can meet some friends, you can just sit and read the paper. You don't actually even need to be catching a train. So these things are places in themselves. And actually, that's not really about money, that's about the ingenuity that is really born of constraints, which is where really, really good design matters. We've got a lot of constraints here. We're also spending a lot of money. So using the design process to prioritise and make sure where the public purse is being directed is absolutely to maximum impact.
What you both seem, I think perhaps everybody's saying, but you both seem to be saying is, what seems to inevitably flow from what you're saying, is that there's going to be a need for a huge engagement within each community.
Because but that's a huge opportunity. What a fantastic opportunity.
That came across a negative way, it meant across in a positive way.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I think also coordination. So the coordination factor between, you know, people have said this morning, it's more than a transport project. Well, if it's more than a transport project, it needs more partners around the table.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to deliver it with just an organisation that has got transport at the centre of their remit.
And I'm so struck by the talent of young people. You mentioned they've gone to 40. You know, they are not stupid. They care hugely. They are the future. And actually, I find the more that we hand over these sort of conversations to them, give them the power. You know, I look at some of our campuses, which actually, it's a shell. Actually, what happens inside, we've turned over to the students. We've said, how do you want this to work? What works for you? You know, there's furniture that I find horrible, you know, high-backed, enclosed, but that's the sort of space they're looking for. So I think we have a real opportunity to be able to do that. Though I am talking about engagement, but I'm actually talking about engagement with people who are going to be here in two or three generations' time, as people that are the future of our region. Clearly, we've got a very young group of council leaders. I think it is another factor why the 10 have come together. It's huge. Let's not underestimate that. But actually, we do need to capitalise on that energy, that vibrancy, those ideas, and actually let them influence what happens and how it works.
Could we just move the conversation on to commercial investment? So, Julie, the university over the last 10 or 20 years has made significant investments in Cardiff, as well as in its base in Trafalgar and Pontypridd. And so many organisations, when they look to invest here, invest in the middle of Cardiff. Chris and I know that. Chris is the last chair of the Enterprise Zone Board, and I was two before him. And we were very clear in that. It was very evident. That's the natural homing point for organisations looking to invest. How long do you think it will take for the Metro to take the eye of those organisations up the valley?
I don't know whether I can honestly answer that. Sometimes it's an accident of history. Would I have desired putting a university into a forest? Probably not, if you were starting today, because actually there isn't the infrastructure to support it. And yet we are there. So actually there's a pragmatism about actually the opportunity and what you can do. All I can say is that actually, you can see how optimistic I am. Actually, I really do think we underestimate the power of young people. We've just spent another 20 million or so on our sports park in Trafalgar Industrial Estate. Now, we did that primarily because we've got great expertise and we thought we could recruit the students. Okay, we can't get them there unless they can get there. So actually, I mean, that you couldn't have picked a better train station, because your nibs, I've gone off that station by mistake when I first worked here. And I'll be honest with you, if I hadn't had a contract, I probably would have walked away and not come here to work. So actually, we have got, I think, those opportunities. I've had a lot of experience working in the West Midlands. The Spine Road, which is one of the big projects to regenerate the West Midlands, many of the people around the room will be aware of that. Here I am sitting 40 years later, and I can only just now see, actually, the vibrancy that's come from that development. It takes a long time. So I don't want to over-egg this, but I would expect to see within 5 to 10 years you see the green shoots. If you're actually enabling it to happen, I do think your point about thinking alternatively, actually letting the design element come in here, the vibrancy, the need for great digital infrastructure, because actually that's where most employment opportunities are going, is around that digital infrastructure.
There's probably an opportunity not just to pull the investment interest from the large capital and to kind of break the London effect of Cardiff, if you see what I mean, but also to galvanise within those places new investment, new markets, not just to be market-led, but to lead the market. Lord knows we might surprise ourselves, wouldn't that be amazing? But to look at what talent is there, you know, how do we keep it, how do we share it, how do we move it around and promote it and galvanise what is going on in each of these places. And I think there's a massive opportunity in that, which allows us a kind of leadership moment in terms of the vision, I think, to allow the principles to evolve and change and for the investment structure to move, to seize the opportunity or to create new opportunities. And I think that would just be, you know, the flexibility has been built in through the procurement process. If we can hold that and protect it, we could have something really special here.
Chris, do you think, listening to Julie and Caroline, do you think that we can encourage commerce up the valleys using the Metro?
we're talking about one element of the business environment. You know, it's all about improving the business environment, and actually there's a number of factors that influence that, and depending what sector you're in or what industry you're in, it depends how you rank those factors. And probably most people would actually put skills number one. Infrastructure is one or two. Funding, probably one, two or three. It's right up there, having the capital, and Wales is short on capital. Yes, you bring in other areas such as planning and strategic governance and those sort of things. Use of devolved taxes. So I think it needs to be looked at in the mix. And the problem is, it's such a vast scale here. But yes, you do have the ability to take things up into the valleys, but it must be complementary to Cardiff. And I would also say, let's not lose sight of the fact that we happen to have a true success story of the Welsh economy here in terms of our capital city. Yeah. And yes, we need to spread the prosperity, but let's not hamstring Cardiff either. Just come back to as well to that transfer of wealth between the two. And that can also happen in terms of land use planning. You know, people look at betterment and capturing development value very much through a Crossrail lens, and you know, go and buy a square of London, build a station underneath it, and it's worth £1 billion more. It's not going to happen here. It really isn't going to happen. But there was one golden egg that could have paid for part of Metro, and that was the residential expansion of Cardiff. And what was allowed to happen was that just went ahead anyway. Cardiff Council have captured that planning gain through 106s because it's a council in austerity, so fair play to it. But I went to see Carl Sargent 3 years ago and suggested, why don't we have a £1,000 a bedroom levy through a supplementary planning guidance or in terms of paying for Metro? You've got 40,000 houses, it's over £100 million you could have done. But we haven't done that. We've effectively, what we're doing is we're now building the houses before the infrastructure. The private sector developers don't want to know. The council will do its best, but essentially in about 10 years' time, Welsh Government have to step in and retrofit infrastructure. And I think there's really only two examples where we put the infrastructure in first. That was Cumbrian Newtown and maybe Cardiff Bay. And I'd like to see this whole joined-up thinking getting back to putting the infrastructure in first.
Which comes back to where Julie started.
Yeah.
Hugh, do you want to come in on that before I move to the audience?
Well, just to reiterate the point I made earlier, that commitment is very much there from the region to that strategic development plan. It's a big, big job to undertake. It is going to be difficult to engage with communities. I know it's very difficult at a local development plan level. You know, until that planning application is made for your backyard, most people are just not interested, and it is incredibly hard to get them interested in grand visions for, you know, big regions when they're interested in only what's happening on their doorstep.
Do you think this will lead to a single strategic planning authority?
In one sense, yes. Certainly a strategic development plan, which will require a strategic planning function at a regional level. And I have no problem with conceding power or control, because it's about sharing actually problems that we've all got and finding better solutions. And from day one, I've said, actually, that I would have rather started with a strategic development plan and then had the metro, but it hasn't worked like that. And we've got to deal with what we've got in front of us, but we can make it better in the future and make sure that phase 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the metro is actually part of a wider vision and is in that context of all the other factors that we have to consider. Like, for example, because probably most of Cardiff's 106 contributions are going on affordable and social housing, are going on brand new schools, which will be desperately needed in the capital to accommodate all these extra children. And then the choice is, you know, where does the money come from? No doubt Cardiff have, you know, squeezed every last penny out of the developer. Well, I hope they have anyway. Developers, I should say. Yes.
So I've asked a lot of questions. We've got Robert here. But two questions. If I take Robert, who's by the pillar, first, then the gentleman in front second. I would take both questions, then we'll answer them at much the same time.
Okay, Chris, Robert Chapman. I attempt to know a little bit about regeneration. I've just been jotting some notes down. And by the way, this is, I think, an excellent conference. Well done to everyone involved in creating it, because hopefully it'll be the start for catalyzing conversations. I think lots of conversations need to take place. A couple of quick observations before I ask the question. I think Carol Ann has got it right. We're missing the people agenda, and I think and Julie also nods to the power of young people. Where are they actually potentially influencing all of this? Chris, I take your note about Centre for Cities, but let's not forget Centre for Towns, who have some important stuff to say about place. Here's the question: a recent research by Manchester University states that, you know, so-called property-led, market-led regeneration, which is around, you know, financialization, professionalization, has failed. There is still significant inequality. And they call for a civic futures involving local people influencing the outcomes. Do you agree?
Take two questions. Take the gentleman here.
Stuart Cole from the University of South Wales, Madjuri. Over the whole of this morning, we've had a discussion about the role of local authorities in the wider context of developing the railway. And it applies as much in the valleys as elsewhere. We heard about the three levels of development. Let's just stick to the basic level, which affects Hugh and his other leaders within the local authorities. Treforestation, we all agree, is best knocked down and rebuilt somewhere else. And it's a bit extreme, but that's what Transport for Wales have decided to do. But my question is, at stations like that, of which there are quite a number in the valleys, where the approach to the station is not particularly pleasant, and it's probably more than that, it's off-putting, how do we get the local authorities, even within their local area, not taking the grand schemes, to work with Transport for Wales to improve what I know Sustrans in the past have called the final mile, so that people can cycle to the station, walk to the station, feel that it's safe and comfortable. And I've had discussions in the past with James about this particular issue. How do we get that process to move? Because that's what's going to get people out of their cars to do that final mile.
James, can I ask you to deal with those first?
I think happily that we've got legislation in Wales that helps us to do that with the Active Travel Act. And it comes back to that level of coordination between transportation and then local authorities. When we went out doing some research on good quality transit placemaking, you could see where there had been a new shiny interchange. You know, beautiful building, seemed to work really, really well. The town centre had a complete new public realm paving scheme. Both were very good in their own right, but you could tell that there were conversations that hadn't happened in the planning and the design of these two things that were actually very good in their own right. It probably only would have taken about five or six meetings, and these two big pieces of public investment would have completely dovetailed together for much better effect. So I think really understanding that first and last mile, because if the first and last mile don't work, and people own a car, then it doesn't really matter how good we're talking about this as a network.
And that translates into the point that Caroline was making earlier about the stations themselves being more than stations.
Yeah.
But it's also about the service being easier, more convenient, and more pleasant than getting in your car. And if you look at all integrated transport successful systems across Europe, they are the optimum option. So it's just got to be easier, quicker, more affordable. And it needs to get to where you need to be. There's some huge learning from Midlands on this as well.
There's a theme emerging. If you take Robert's question, which leads to the point essentially is more public engagement. You take Julie's point earlier about the need for people to engage, a new body to engage to put it all together. James's point about conversations with communities over the design of the station, over the what's going to happen in each of their communities. Carol Ann's point about engagement over design. Chris, do you think that level of engagement will happen without something changing?
I do think there is an opportunity here for a more strategic vision and a higher level authority. I have to say that. I think the problem you have at the moment is differential performance of local authorities. And Bridgend, actually, to be fair, the town centre's really turned around. RCT to me, new schools programme, Cross Valleys Link, it's happening all over it. But I could name two or three other local authorities where it's a bit of a desert in terms of activity. And to be fair, some local authorities are just existing in terms of their budgets. They're so small in scale that all they can do is just exist. And they haven't got that ability to go to the next step. So I really think there's that ability to using that joined up thinking to try and create that. Maybe Transport for Wales has got to take on this responsibility. At the end of the day, it's all one pot.
You're shaking your head.
Can I have that in writing? You said Bridgend's been turned around. Or at least everyone put that on Twitter. Camden residents. Some of them don't believe it. We've got a regional transport authority. We are, so Stuart asked, it's happening already. I'm having those conversations. It feels like a fortnightly basis. I can see colleagues here from the regional transport authority. And we're saying that to Transport for Wales and Transport for Wales and no doubt Keolis Amy are listening. So one of the easiest and simplest ways we can improve accessibility for people living in Bridgend is open platform to the public, so people don't have to walk 3 miles round the other side of the station to get into the station. That would cost next to nothing, but it would open up direct walking and cycling routes for probably 1,000 residents in Bridgend. But we're having that dialogue at the moment, and indeed, we are. We'll be looking tomorrow. You've heard it here first. The Regional Transport Authority at a series of packages to improve accessibility to our train stations, to look at bus priority improvements, and also at park and rides to make a lot of our stations much more accessible to the communities that they are serving.
Great. So I take some more questions, please. I've got two hands close to each other at the back there. If we could go there, please.
Thank you. Kay Powell, Land of Society. Can I echo points about how timely, this conference is and what interesting issues are being raised? As a planner, I'm very interested, and former transport planner, very interested in this concept which is being recreated of land use transport planning. It really is overdue. But can I point out that local authorities in Wales have had their budgets for planning cut by 50% in the last 8 or so years? And that is, I'm sure, not helping us in promoting a more integrated view of the future opportunities. Can I also pick up the point by Carol Ann, which I thought was excellent, about involving younger people in actually the future of travel? And my third point is, we've been talking about 4 buses an hour, 4 trains an hour, etc. But actually, this is about evenings and weekends when work on railways can absolutely make journeys a nightmare, Sundays, which is a particular issue. Some people are only using their cars for weekend travel and Sundays, and they're cluttering up our roads. We really have to rethink this accessibility issue, and I'm really, really pleased that this is one of the big issues that's coming out of this conference today, and I do hope that it is taken forward into practical ways to tackle this. Thank you.
Another hand just behind there, I think.
Mark Youngman, formerly of several parishes, and also formerly, I suppose, involved with some of the vision strategy and plans which never quite got to fruition in a stage that Mark sort of took it forward for. And I think I'd make 2 points, and one really question about why that possibly didn't happen is that people have had lots of vision before, lots of strategies, there's been lots of blockers, and I have to say I think one of the blockers, and it hasn't really been touched upon here, is you can have all the public engagement in the world, you can have all the regional structures, but then if you haven't got somebody in the political arena who's willing to stick their head above the parapet and actually do the right thing as opposed to actually doing something that just court's public opinion, as evidenced by removing of the tolls on the Severn Bridge. You know, we will forever be in a, you know, we've got the potential that we'll be here 15 years down the line, because when the political element gets thrown into it, it's just governed by five-year political cycles and whether or not, you know, Mrs. Jones actually wants a bus stop outside of her house.
I suppose that's, in some ways, echoing Julie's point about the need to take the power. I don't want to feel like I'm picking on you, because you were very kind. But to take the power away from a political environment, which is, works in electoral cycles, and put it into a development authority, which has just got the firepower to get on with it. I don't know.
I'm sure Chris wants to come in. I think democratic accountability is absolutely key. It's 1.2 billion of public money that we're talking about here, and I think the communities have the right to have their say in that. They have the right to hold people accountable to how that money is invested. But I think actually having that city region cabinet, it offers the best of both worlds. So there's accountability there, democratic accountability, but there's also a shared vision. And I think that shared vision will be still here, whoever comes and goes as leaders, because we have, some of us have got the sort of lifespan of fruit flies. You know, we you know, politics is ever this. But if the vision is right, and we have got the right vision, if we start to put the planning infrastructure around that in terms of a strategic transport plan, which we are developing, a strategic development plan, which we will be developing, then I think the rest will follow on from that.
Caroline.
There's a couple of points tied in, and I think I wanted to pick up the strategic planning point, the civic point, and really this participatory point. We all talk about resources and how much we've lost, and it's really difficult, and we all know there will never be any money ever again, which means that we have simply got to think differently. And the huge ambition here for this to be an inclusive and collaborative project is a massive opportunity. And it's a space you were all asked this morning to step into, and other communities need to be encouraged to step into it. And there can be some really simple ways to do it if you galvanise the resources of others. I've just got to actually recognise the work Design Circle have done on this already. Fantastic investigation into the possibilities of this across stations. You were part of it as well. That work is out there. It can, you know, be used to galvanise that kind of collaborative process. Recently in Cyfarthfa, the Design Commission were given £25,000, or actually a £30,000 budget by Merthyr Tydfil, to run a charrette with 65 people in Cyfarthfa in a hurricane. That's led to a hugely strategic report, which has been unanimously accepted by council, and we are into the second phases of getting on with it. Yes, it's massively ambitious, but you've got to begin somewhere. So unlocking the resource plus the power of collaboration can be done. We have to look outside ourselves, really, and invite others in.
If I go Chris first, then James.
Yeah, okay, so just picking up on the planning point, and I sympathise the fact that the planning budgets have been cut over the last 8 years, but that's slightly undermined by the fact the LDP's deadline for delivery was 2008, and we've actually only just seen the last one or two being delivered. So we have a historic sort of record of under-delivery or late delivery in terms of LDPs. I think the point on the governance and the democratic accountability, fully accept that. Technical governance does give you some ability to make the decisions, the long-term decisions over the five-year cycle, whereas the current position means that probably only 3 years out of five you can take tough decisions, because you can't take those tough decisions in the run-up to a couple of the elections. But let's also be honest that I think the Ministerial Task Force of the Valleys in some ways was a response to the fact that the Brexit vote was, look, you're not listening to us. You're not listening. You're telling us what's good for us, and you're not listening to us. And I think that Ministerial Task Force, therefore, did a good job of listening. But as I say, it's currently maximum credibility, minimum delivery. And the danger is now that it just sort of withers away.
Yeah,
Yeah, I just want to build on Caroline's point about inviting others into the process. I think some of the things that we've been focusing on as part of the discussion is about almost that top level, the strategic, the governance, and how you get people involved with the process when it is so strategic. It can be a huge challenge. One of the opportunities is about inviting people into the design process. Yeah. And the clue is in the title there, it's the design process. I think one of the things that we haven't done terribly well over the last 15 or 20 years, UK as a whole, Wales in particular, is around the skills that are around a table when you start thinking about what is this piece of infrastructure, what is this place, what do we want it to look like? So getting the right design professionals around the table, the ones that Caroline mentioned earlier, but then actually getting the local experts in, the people that live there, the people that will use the service, and getting them actually embedded into the design process. I think if we can find a way of doing that systematically, a way of getting the right level of involvement, at that point we're going to start seeing some really, really interesting stuff happening rather than try and sort of control it with huge strategic governance structures, which we do need.
There's moves from being something that's been done to us that we are all engaged in. Julie, that's your theme, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and I think, you know, everybody knows that actually not everybody can be involved in every decision. I'm completely with you on public accountability. But for me, it's moving it from a sort of high-level principle to actually what's it really going to mean on the ground. Mm. And, you know, we're sitting in this room, and again, we're back to the voices of the generations that are going to benefit from this, the people who are going to live with it, are really not being engaged. And therefore, if it's around a design project, let's give them that scope. I've been seeing in some of the principles, though. So, you know, we're clearly saying we want this to be green, environmentally friendly. Okay. So where's the accountability for that? Is that something actually that's coming through from that voice? You know, how do people want to work in the future? Most young people I talk to are seeing not going to a place to work. They're wanting actually to have the flexibility to work from their own home environment. They may want to go and work in a community space, so actually they've got some collegiality around it. So it's those sort of things I think we really do have an opportunity to play in. And at the end of the day, British accountability must come through actually serving those communities well. So for me, I think I can square the circle off between the high-level principle and the fundamental engagement. I wouldn't claim to be an expert making a decision what train you should buy. I don't think anybody is expecting to be involved in that decision, but actually how we expect that service to be delivered, how we expect that to make opportunities possible is something that I think we have got a real task to engage with that future generation.
It does seem to be a sort of a feeling in the room and on the platform that the Metro is not just hard infrastructure project. It's an opportunity to create the most incredible engagement in communities that hitherto have felt a bit left behind. What's gone on here?
Absolutely, and we need to grab that opportunity. Of course, the first phase of the Metro wasn't developed, hasn't been developed by CityD. We've simply been a consultee, if you like, in terms of future phases, because if we're to have additional phases, then there needs to be additional investment. We, of course, have said as a region that transport will always be a key priority for us because of what businesses say, because of what our communities say. If we're to invest additional money in the Metro as a region, then there will have to be that level of engagement with our communities. But obviously, Welsh Government had a very delicate procurement process to undertake, and I think the nature of that process, where they wanted to see what the successful bidder could come up with, meant that there wasn't a level of public engagement in that, obviously. That is a downside, isn't it, of this? That said, the devil is in the detail, and the detail has not been agreed. That will come now through the next, I suppose, 6 to 12 months, where they haven't designed every detail of every scheme, and that can make all the difference, can't it? So the experts tell us anyway, and I agree with them.
So I'm on my five-minute warning. We're on our five-minute warning. Can I take two more questions? Steve here first, and then I'll take gentleman over there. Steve first.
Diolch. So thanks very much. At the start of the presentation, Chris, seeing Pontypridd's High Street there reminded me of a great song from Climbing Trees, which is filmed in the Bunch of Grapes just below the flyover. And a lyric in that I thought was particularly convenient. Settling down in a ghost town, I'm digging holes for the little ones. Who needs more than a ghost town where some of us live asleep and some of us don't? And the Metro strikes me as a great project for getting those little ones out and into prosperous jobs in Cardiff, Newport and the like. But I'm wondering if there is more we could be doing to change the apathetic acceptance of people in these ghost towns, that they live in a place that's not as good, but hey, they're the cards we're dealt. And I say that as once upon a long ago, a blinder boy myself. So I wonder if that's something we should be trying to change or not. Should we just accept that?
Let's answer that while the microphone's working its way across the room.
So I actually think that the Valleys towns need to find a complementary role to Cardiff, but they can also exploit certain opportunities available to them. It's great to see IndyCube here. It's great track record in the Valleys and other parts of Wales as well. We need to have that more flexible space and allow people to work from these locations, either through their established job or through their entrepreneurial spirit.
And I just have to come in there. I think it's an interesting comparison, but I just do not recognise Pontypridd as a ghost town. Pontypridd is a vibrant place with a really positive future, and we've seen that on the presentation. Yes, you know, it's all smelling of roses, but you know, there's a bright future for all our valleys towns. It's a university town after all, isn't it, Pontypridd? There's huge opportunities there, and we can grab hold of those opportunities, not just through the metro, but by investing in our education system as well. And I'm really pleased that RCT, a visionary council, I think, is only last week published a scheme to invest in 21st century schools in Pontypridd, I think 20-30 million. That's another game changer for the town of Pontypridd, I think.
Just two observations. My odd claim to fame is I've appeared in a Climbing Trees video. Not people say that one.
I've appeared in a Bunch of Grapes.
It wasn't a Bunch of Grapes, no. But the other was, for the purpose of doing this, I had a chat. I spoke with all the people who work at Capital, live in Pontypridd, and you know, what's it like there? Because I don't live there. And their reaction was exactly what you said. I absolutely loved it, and you know, can't believe that, though they can believe that this is happening, but think it's amazing. And their conversations were all about the, you know, the good things it will do and how it will lift the spirits, but the feeling there was very strong. So one more question over here.
Alistair Crapp from LDA Design. I sit on the design panel with Carol Ann.
Could you put the microphone a bit closer?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Alistair Crapp from LDA Design. I'm a great believer in lessons learnt, and almost the inception of Transport for Wales kicking off. Could the panel suggest a lesson learnt that they think would be valuable for the Transport for Wales to take forward?
I was going to give them the opportunity afterwards to say one final thing. Okay. This will be the one final thing because it's a good question. I'll go, Chris, round in order.
Well, I think we need stronger leadership and we need that more strategic vision. And that's the most important thing to deliver.
Partnership with communities, local authorities, and as a key partners.
You can tell he's a politician. Good answer.
Flexibility. I think, you know, in my own environment, actually we need to just build flexibly, develop flexibly. Nobody can call what the future is completely. So actually, how do we harness the talent, particularly of young people, to develop our environment such that actually in 10 years' time we don't turn around and actually wish we hadn't put that staircase there because actually it doesn't work anymore. So how do we develop that flexibility within this?
I think part of it is around getting the right decisions that are taken, particularly around design. You know, so some of the lessons that we've found from other networks where extendability has been an opportunity, well, it just changes. You know, the way that things look, the way that things feel, the tastes at the time change. So you end up with this sort of network and each arm feels like it belongs to a different body. It doesn't really work. So I think finding house style that works for the whole network, that can be adapted and tweaked according to the place, is a really vital lesson from other projects elsewhere.
Finally, Caroline.
I think it is about the learning. Can I just say thank you, Alistair, the kind of bomb of a question at the end. This really ought to be a project that is characterised by Transport for Wales spending time to understand the value of design, and particularly in infrastructure. So this project could be, for instance, characterised by the risk reduction that comes with the design process and by the maximisation of value that is delivered through the design process. And again, I've got to say, how excellence can really help you galvanise the agglomeration that we're looking for. So draw on the talents, learn from how late HS2 came to this and Crossrail, despite having great visions, and open the doors to those that can help.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Chris, Hugh, Julie, James, Caroline, thanks for giving your morning up. I thought that was a terrific discussion.